Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. And with the Washington Press Corps under particular attack, we will begin the show today with two of Washington's really great journalists, Susan Glasser, Politico's chief foreign affairs columnist, and Washington Post correspondent David Fahrenthold. David joins us first. He's being called things by his peers now, like journalism's 2016 MVP, for his investigative reporting that revealed how Donald Trump used money from the Trump Foundation to fund himself, including a 6-foot-tall portrait of himself. Just last week, David Fahrenthold won a prestigious Polk Award for the story. He remains on an investigative Trump conflict of interest beat. Thanks so much for coming on, David. Welcome to WNYC, and congratulations on your Polk Award.
Well, thank you.
Can you start with one great plot twist from your famous series of stories? This comes just after President Obama gave a speech for Hillary Clinton in September, just after you had revealed Trump Foundation money was used for the portrait, and Obama said this.
You want to debate foundations and charities? One candidate's family foundation has saved countless lives around the world. The other candidate's foundation took money other people gave to his charity and then bought a 6-foot-tall painting of himself.
So Obama said that, and then you tweeted, "Remember, I'm still looking for this portrait. Neon colors, black background, 6-foot-tall." Then what happened?
Well, we found another portrait. That was the most amazing thing. Somebody called me out of the blue to say that Trump had actually done this twice. So there was the $20,000 6-foot-tall portrait that President Obama was talking about, and then another another portrait that he paid $10,000 for, also using money that was supposed to be meant for charity. And so we actually got a picture of the second portrait, and then using the magic of social media, we're able to find it on hanging on the wall of Trump's sports bar at a resort he owned in Florida.
Do you call that crowdsourcing, enlisting your readers as deputy investigators in that way?
Yes, and it was something that I didn't even really know was possible before I sort of stumbled into it. In this case, I have a picture of this painting, and I say, okay, well, I know it's somewhere in the world. Trump bought it with charity money. In order for it to be a legal purchase, he needs to be using that portrait for charity. He can't just be using it to decorate the wall of his hotel. But I don't know where it is. So I put it out there on Twitter. In a few hours, one of my readers has found it on a website, TripAdvisor, where people can post photos from hotels they've gone to. She finds it on the page for the resort in Doral. She scans through 500 photos of, you know, the 18th green and the hotel buffet and people's bathrooms and everything, and finds this portrait. Okay, well, now we know where it was. The picture of the portrait at Doral is dated February 2016. We don't know where it is right at this moment. This was in September. So I put that out on Twitter, and then it turns out that there's an anchor at Univision, the Spanish-language TV network, and their studios are just 4 blocks away from Doral. This anchor, Enrique Acevedo, realizes, oh, wow, it's only 4 blocks away, makes a reservation for that night, and he uses points, doesn't use cash because he doesn't want to pay Donald Trump any money. And he goes to the resort, looks in the, you know, walks around the hallways late at night, and finds it. So there it is on the wall. We go from not knowing where in the world it was to 10 o'clock that morning to having somebody right in front of it at midnight that night.
That's a great story. I read that you also published two follow-up stories around that time about how CNN had solved three mysteries from one of your early stories. Did that happen?
Yes, that was a fascinating tale. So looking through the files of the Donald J. Trump Foundation, which was the president's personal charity, I found some instances where the Trump Foundation said that it had given money to different charities, but the charities, when I called them, said they didn't get it. Five different cases where the Trump Foundation said it gave the money, the charity said they didn't get it. So I asked the Trump campaign, well, hey, where did this money go? You know, what's the deal here? And characteristically, they didn't get back to me at all. But what they did actually was take – they knew the information. They actually had the answers. They waited until the story came out, and I learned later this was a trick that they used to pull a lot in the New York tabloid scene. They then gave the information that I had asked for but they hadn't given to CNN so that when I went on CNN, CNN would say, hey, look, we found the answers to this question that you couldn't find. In these cases, it was a couple cases where Trump's foundation had listed the wrong charity in the wrong state and it really had gone to a charity with a similar name in another state. In three cases, the charities had gone back and found the money that they hadn't been able to find for me. Anyway, that led me to another sort of social media tactic, which is I started posting the questions I sent to the Trump people because I wasn't sure whether they were going to actually, you know, if they ignored my questions, I didn't want them to then give it to somebody else and act like I hadn't done my job.
Usually news organizations compete with each other to get those scoops. I think in the Watergate days, like when the Washington Post would get a big scoop, some other newspapers would downplay it while trying to confirm it themselves rather than look what the Washington Post found about Nixon. So are we in a different time right now where news organizations would build on and credit each other like that?
I think there's more of that now. Certainly, I think that there's less of a sense that, you know, you're not going to be a binary, you know, it's not a binary choice. Am I going to subscribe to the Washington Post but not the New York Times? Am I going to read the New York Times but not Slate? I mean, because of social media and the internet, people have access to all these news sources. So the idea that you can sort of keep your readers from knowing about this great thing somebody else did is dumb. So there is more collaboration – well, not collaboration, but there's more sort of building on one another's work. And I think you've seen that a lot in the first few weeks of the Trump administration, especially on like the Mike Flynn coverage, uh-huh. where it felt like there was every few days, you know, the Washington Post would have a scoop at 6 p.m. and the New York Times would have a scoop at 8 p.m. and the Wall Street Journal would have it at 10. You know, there was just such a great sense of competition that was pushing that story forward really rapidly.
My guest is Washington Post correspondent David Fahrenthold, who just won a Polk Award for his story uncovering Donald Trump's use of money from his Trump Foundation charity to spend on himself, like those 2 6-foot-tall portraits. How did you figure out in the first place that Trump used money from his charity to buy the portrait of himself or portraits?
That was a case where I was going through a listing of all the charities that the Donald J. Trump Foundation had given money to. That's listed in the Trump Foundation's tax returns, trying to figure out, you know, once I knew that Trump had been using charity money to buy things for himself, then that was a question I started asking all the charities that the Trump Foundation had given money to. So in this case, I called this charity in Florida that had held a gala at Mar-a-Lago, Trump's club down in Palm Beach, back in 2007. And I said, you know, did you really get this money? Yes. You know, what was the money for? And they told this story about how at the gala, which Trump attended, there was a speed painter, a guy who paints a whole like 6-foot-tall painting in 5 minutes, paints it upside down. There's crazy music playing. At the end, he sort of flips it over and you go, oh, my God, it's John Lennon or it's Donald Trump or whoever it is. And then he auctions off the painting. So he did that for Trump and he auctioned off the painting. Melania Trump is the only bidder. She bids $10,000. Everybody else stops bidding. And then the auctioneer is like, you know, you're Melania Trump. Your husband's a billionaire. You could bid $20,000. So she does and wins it. That's all fine. If Trump wants to pay for a portrait of himself for $20,000 and the money goes to charity, that's great. The problem is that he used the Trump Foundation's money to pay that check, pay that bill. And if he's going to if his money is his charity, it's meant for charity. It's not meant to buy things for himself, no matter who he was buying them from. So that's a case where once he bought it, he had to use it for charity because it belonged to the Trump Foundation. And I still don't know where that larger 6-foot-tall portrait is.
Hmm. And that wasn't even a question of unnamed sources, that kind of digging and leaking. No. You were just going through documents, records.
Right. And so when I called the charity down in Florida, it was called Children's Place at Home Safe. You know, I got the director on the phone. He said, oh, yeah, here's the check. Here's what happened. It was all on the record.
And I see you're currently part of a team covering Trump's possible conflicts of interest, including the emoluments clause, which we're going to talk about later in the show with Congressman Gerald Nadler, who's also looking into possible violations of the emoluments clause of the Constitution. Is the president exempt from that, though, as he is from other conflict of interest laws? And can you remind us why the president, our highest ranking and most powerful public servant, is exempt from conflict of interest laws in the first place?
Well, the president's exempt from some conflict of interest laws on the theory that the voters are the check there. You know, there's a clause for impeachment of the Constitution if the president breaks the law. But if the president does something that is an untoward conflict of interest that doesn't rise to the level of impeachment, the voters are supposed to be the ones who throw him or her out in response. So, you know, there's other places in the government, appointed federal officials, people like that, don't have the same sort of direct democratic check on their power. So that's, I think, the logic why the president is exempt from some conflicts of interest. That said, the Emoluments Clause, which basically bars any federal official from taking money from a foreign government, it appears not to exempt the president. It appears to apply to the president. The problem is that basically all presidents have steered so far clear of any kind of conflict with it that there's no case law. We don't really know how the courts will interpret it. So there are some people who claim that it doesn't really apply to the president based on some sort of obscure readings of constitutional language. Other people think it does apply to the president, but it doesn't apply to the kinds of money that Trump is getting from foreign governments. So he owns hotels. He owns golf courses. They get payments for services from foreign governments. There's an argument by Trump's people that that's not the same as getting just a straight up gift from a foreign government. You know, the argument being, well, you know, if a guy, the ambassador of Pakistan, you know, rents a room at Trump Hotel, how are we to know? So there's going to be, I think, a number of cases testing how the Emoluments Clause works and that are going to be running through the federal court system this year. So we'll make a little more clarity soon.
Are you looking for Trump's tax returns?
Yes, along with everybody else in Washington. At this point, it seems very, very unlikely that he will release them voluntarily, despite what he's promised over the last couple of years, that he's just waiting for an audit to be concluded or something like that. It's possible that some investigation could produce his tax returns, some congressional investigation, but I don't think we're anywhere near that now. And Trump has shown that he will do almost anything to avoid giving out his tax returns. So if it ever does come to a head like that with a congressional investigation asking for his tax returns, I really don't know what will happen.
Since everyone in Washington seems to leak everything to everyone else, why aren't Trump's tax returns out by now to investigative reporters like you? Why is something like that harder than wiretaps of Michael Flynn to get out?
The reason I've always heard is that the IRS obviously has copies of these things, but there's a large federal penalties. You're breaking the law if you release them. So that's a pretty hefty thing to deal with. And so I don't know for sure, but I imagine people are pretty deterred by that.
I'm sure the listeners would like to get your take as an investigative reporter on the use of unnamed sources. Trump doesn't like, obviously, that people are spilling the insider beans on him. So last week in his CPAC speech, he said this.
I'm against the people that make up stories and make up sources. They shouldn't be allowed to use sources unless they use somebody's name.
They shouldn't be allowed to use sources unless they use somebody's name. How much do you think that kind of rule or that kind of professional standard would be in the public interest?
Well, it would not be. I mean, there's so many things that we've learned about the Trump administration so far, just to pick his, you know, the most recent example, that are in the public interest. Things about Mike Flynn lying to the vice president, for instance. So that being one pretty major one recently that wouldn't have come out if it hadn't been for anonymous sources. And the most hypocritical thing about this is that Trump's own administration operates almost entirely on background, meaning they will only be quoted without giving their names. So many things you see in the paper are from senior administration officials. Those are people that are not meeting in some parking garage someplace. They're just giving out a briefing, but they don't want to be named as the source of the briefing. So Trump's own administration operates almost exclusively as anonymous sources. So either he doesn't know that or he's counting on his supporters not knowing that.
You did reveal one little peek into Trump's taxes, a $2,500 tax penalty that he paid in conjunction with the abuse of his charitable foundation. What was that for again?
He had used his charitable foundation a couple of years ago to send a $25,000 check to a political committee in Florida that supported Pam Bondi, the attorney general of Florida, who's been a big, big Trump supporter. At the time of that donation that he gave to Pam Bondi's PAC, she was considering, or I guess her office was considering, whether to join a lawsuit that other states had filed against Trump University for allegedly defrauding its students. So Trump gave that donation, which was legal, except that he had given it from his charity, and charities are not allowed to be used for political donations. So when we brought that to light back in February, Trump agreed to pay a 10% $2,500 penalty to the IRS for having misused charity money.
By the way, I was pretty shocked yesterday and pleasantly surprised by former President George W. Bush going on the Today Show and defending the press. Here's a little bit of that.
I consider the media to be indispensable to democracy. That we need an independent media to hold people like me to account. I mean, power can be very addictive, and it can be corrosive, and it's important for the media to call to account people who abuse their power, whether it be here or elsewhere. One of the things I spent a lot of time doing was trying to convince a person like Vladimir Putin, for example, to accept the notion of an independent press.
Right.
And it's kind of hard to tell others to have an independent free press, and we're not willing to have one ourselves.
George W. Bush on the Today Show yesterday. David Fahrenthold with the Washington Post. Before you go, you were with the Post through the Bush administration when there was plenty of tough stuff written about him and his presidency. How surprised were you by that yesterday?
I was not surprised. I mean, I think it's easier to say when you're out of office. I think people, you know, it's always easier to have that perspective when it's not about you. But President Bush, as much criticism as the media gave him, and as much trouble as his administration had, never had the kind of, you know, enemy of the people rhetoric that Donald Trump has been using for the media. You know, you can say a lot of things about the George Bush presidency, but certainly there was none of this that we've already seen in the first month of the Trump administration, sort of sense of the media as the enemy. To the degree that Trump actually believes it, I don't know, but he's talking about it publicly in a way that Bush never did.
David Fahrenthold, who's been called things recently by his peers like journalism's 2016 MVP for his investigative report, revealing how Donald Trump used money from the Trump Foundation to fund himself, including those 6-foot-tall portraits. Just last week, David Fahrenthold won a prestigious Polk Award for the story, and he remains on an investigative Trump conflict of interest beat. David, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay with us.